Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many methods of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Wonderful to have you with me today. Today's show is brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. And because it blocks indoor and outdoor allergens alike, it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies. Now, if you're tired of taking antihistamines, this might just be what you've been looking for. Here's the man behind NasalGuard, Ashok Vahi, on what spurred him on to develop an alternative.
Histamines created by allergic reaction is a safety measure. It's an immune response of your body. Body hasn't got anything wrong working yet. Body just took a rope to be a snake, and it reacted. It saw a substance which is harmless to be harmful, to save you from that, flooding it with water, which is as histamine, to dilute it. And that is a nuisance for you, and you kill it with the anti of that, you know, which is antihistamine. Mm-hmm. And people grow out of it. You take one is antihistamine, and then after 2, 3, 4 years, you go to a different one because your body got immune to it.
Yeah.
And then you keep changing. Now there are other products which are not antihistamines, but there are other products. They're all masking it.
Mm-hmm.
Till you reach a point in your life that none of these drugs work on you. It may take 20 years, 30 years, whatever time it takes, but they reach a point. And at that point, they say, what now? And the doctor says, I'll have to give you shots now. And shots are what? Shots are exactly the same substance that you are allergic to.
Wow. Yeah.
And they give you, flood you with that so that the body can't even react to it. So you're playing with your own body's autoimmune system. So the phase one of the story is my daughter was the inspiration to create a product. I'm an inventor and a scientist. I have a Master of Science from NYU. I'm an engineer, mechanical from a university called Thapar University from India, Punjab, Patiala. And having said that, my older daughter, Ekta Vahi, used to suffer from cat allergies. And when she was very young, she was, to the best of my knowledge, no more than 8 years old. She has, in our neighborhood, they were her friends, and they used to exchange each other's residence to play and home to play or sleepovers. And two friends, one particularly nearby, had a cat as a pet at the home. And she, my daughter Ekta, just couldn't visit that home because my daughter was so severely allergic to cat. Mm. And she has been a great student and all her life. And like any other parent, you try to bring some over-the-counter, you know, medicine and give it to her. The medicine worked okay, but it had side effects. She started to feel drowsy in the classroom, and it started to show that, you know, I mean, when you are drowsy, you can study and you can take part in the same way. And I thought, as a father, I have to resolve this problem. And I started to see how can I intervene without giving her or do something without giving her a outside drug product, which will not. So that was my inspiration to create a product. And when I started to search technologies, there were filters available for the nose, even at that time. I'm talking about early 1990s, 90, 91, 92. And the challenge became that I found filters which people had to insert in nose, they didn't look pretty at all. It was like a filter at the butt of the cigarette, like a filter cigarette.
Yeah, nobody
and
wants that.
That doesn't look pretty and it doesn't work right. And so I said it has to be invisible as to work. And safety was a great aspect. Never do I point out that my motivation was not to create a product for sake of money or business. I was trying to solve my own daughter's problem. And one thing led to the other. It came very clear to me that I have to create a water-based type of product around the nose, which will stop. And then I started to dig particle science and at the library of Princeton University early on. And I came across that there are some naturally created waxes like bee wax and all that. But that was also a wax, like a heavier product, not water-based. That research led to me cationic quaternary agents. And I wanted to create a cationic lotion strong enough to catch airborne particles.
And that is how Nasal Guard, an invisible yet effective water-based lotion, was born, after much research and development, I have to say. If you suffer from allergies and want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. Now, last time on the show, I talked with our regular brain health expert, Professor James Goodwin, about how living in the digital age might be affecting our brains and our brain health. Today, I'm delighted to welcome a digital well-being expert to the show to explore the behavioural impact that the digital age is having on us all. Gabriel Pitt is author of a new book called Be Present: Why It's Time to Control Your Digital Habits. He's also created the Master Your Digital Habits method to help people gain control and achieve their full potential. Gabriel's giving a keynote on digital well-being at work at a conference, Embrace Technology, Remain Human, in his hometown of Lausanne later this month. It's on the 23rd of April, in fact. And of course, it's thanks to digital technology that I was able to speak with Gabriel at his home in Switzerland the other day. Gabriel, I have your book with me here. And the first page says, this book is a unique transmedia object that you're invited to make your own. I love the fact that you use QR codes all the way through the book, almost as a sort of, digital media, it's still okay, but we just have to watch what we do with it. So you say that you can enhance your reading experience to listen to playlists of music and sounds, especially for you. You find them on this particular QR code. And you say, for the optimal and most comfortable experience, I recommend that you discover this book in your living room and avoid reading it in your bedroom.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Absolutely. This is one of the issues, isn't it, with digital habits, modern digital habits, that it does impinge upon our sleep and our rest.
Yeah, it is. It is. Thank you for having me with you today. And really happy about talking.
You're welcome.
The idea with the book is that I encourage good habits reading the book, and as a transmedia object, you're right, there are QR code in the entire book, and the idea is to enrich the content and to as well show that technology has a positive aspect or benefits. Yeah. And that was the initial idea with the QR code. And the second one is about the recommendation to read it in the living room is that I don't want to encourage people to use their smartphone in their bed.
Yes.
Because this is one of the topics in the book, that sleep is very important. If you don't sleep well, then it has a lot of impact on your humor, your capacity to take decisions, your willingness to do sports, and so on. So you have plenty of impact. And of course, I wanted to protect people's sleep with this advice I give at the beginning. And Yeah, I don't know in UK, but in my country, there was a report like last week saying that one out of three people suffer from insomnia in our country. So it's huge. So I don't think there are studies right now saying that it's because of the screens exclusively, you know, but most probably the fact that you are in your bed looking at your smartphone reduce the time you sleep and the quality of sleep.
Yeah, it is really important, and it's something that I've had to address in my own life. I've stopped using any devices a long time before I go to bed, and I've started reading an actual book, not one with QR codes in it, but an actual book to allow myself to recover from the blue light in devices and, you know, just watching screens. It's a completely different focus, literally, for your eyes, and a different way for your brain to work, and it's very relaxing. I'm one of those people who can read about three pages of a book and then fall fast asleep. So, I do try to read a little bit before I get to bed, and then when I'm in bed, I can put the light out and get a decent night's sleep, and it really works.
I'm happy that you are sharing your own experience with your sleeping habits and devices habits before sleep. There are some recommendations around that, saying that before going to sleep, you need to not watch any screen 1 or 2 hours before that. So I think the people who are watching and listening us today, they need to take advantages of your experiences and to apply it in their own life because this is really helping to have a better sleep quality. And you mentioned the blue light. Of course, the blue light has an impact on melatonin because it stopped the effect of melatonin that triggered the need of sleep and the quality of sleep. And for that, I give you one easy tip as well that you can apply in your life. It's you can start to activate the night shift on your smartphone. And it changed the light of the smartphone, meaning it cut the blue light in it. And the screen is becoming like orange. And this helped as well to not cut the melatonin effect. So even if you are looking at your devices earlier than when you are going to read, then I can encourage you to as well activate the night shift. And with regard readings, your point is so true and so valid because if you are reading on a paper, it has nothing to do with reading on screen. And the other point is that when you are on your book, you don't have hyperlink where to click that give you more the envy, you know, to discover something more because we as human, we are curious and we love to discover things. New things. And of course, hyperlink encourages as well to continue our discovery of new information, new entertainment, pleasure, and so on. So with the book, there is no option to move forward, discover new things. You are in your story if you are depending on what you are reading, but you are focused on your story. And of course, reading on a paper or on a screen, it's a total different story.
It's interesting. I was speaking with Professor Goodwin recently, and he was talking about how the brain has changed because of our digital habits. We now have a digital brain. We're living in a digital age, and younger people are digital natives, and their brains are slightly different. Now, there is a question as to whether that's good or bad. It seems to be not particularly bad for us, and that it's more the behaviors around digital consumption that are the issues in terms of our health and well-being. I grew up in a time where we didn't have anything like that. We had television and radio and a landline phone. And when I first became a journalist, I, well, this was a good few years ago in the 70s, and we had typewriters that we wrote on with carbon paper in between sheets of paper to create copies of what we wrote that went to the news desk and the sub editors for them to mark up to go to the printers. Nothing was digital in those days. It was hot metal printing in newspapers and magazines, you know, all very old school. And then when we went out as reporters into the community to find our stories or report on what was going on, we used to go to the bank first and get a bag full of coins for the public telephones so that we could call in every hour or so to find out what was happening and what our next assignment would be. Now, I look back on those days and think that is so, so different. We've come so far in my lifetime, but we didn't die because we didn't have mobile phones. We still got the job done. We still disseminated information. And it seems to me that we're overloaded now with information and overloaded with all these different channels.
Yeah. Again, that's very interesting what you are saying and true, because what I try to avoid all the time in saying is saying it was better at our age because it's different, you know. And I have been in contact with younger people as well during workshops and so on. And I had a chance to participate to birthday parties and, yeah, to be in touch with this generation 15, 20. And what is really not different compared to us is they are looking for living, you know. They want to explore the world, and they are full of energy and vitality and so on. So this is the same. Like when we were 18 years old, we wanted to explore and to live our life to the fullest.
Yeah.
So this is not different. The difference now is that the way they explore the world has changed. And of course, they could have two impacts in my view. The first one is mental and the second one is physical. Because when you spend time on screen, and if you look at the different time spent on screen between the different ages, like the boomers, the Gen Z, the Y, the X, and Alpha, and so on, of course, the amount of time spent on smartphone or devices increased for the younger generation. And the point here is that it's not about what you do on your devices and time you spend, it's not what you are not doing being on it. You know what I mean? So it means that at our age, most probably we were outside playing, you know, in the nature or doing anything outside. And now they are less outside and doing physical things. So that could be one of the impacts. The second one is mentally as well. If you spend too much time like being on your devices and communicating through your devices and not communicating in real life outside, then it's changing the social perception and the social capabilities. And I had some feedback about that the communication for younger people is not the same as ours, because if you are used to communicate via messages, then of course it's more difficult to communicate in real life. So these two aspects are really important. Because what we need to think about is, do we want them to spend time on screen that is bringing them added value in their life and helping them to develop themselves in the right way? Or is all this time not really benefiting for them? And that's the key question. And then once you answer the question, you need to make a call, okay. Maybe we need to find a balance, because it's again a question of balance. It's not I spend time on my screen or I don't spend time on my screen. It's more, okay, and I'm always encouraging people for that, especially with the younger people, you know. Like if you have 1 hour and you can, how do you use this hour? You can either spend 1 hour on your screen passively consuming content. You can not be on the screen at all and being outside, or you can be 20 minutes on the screen like watching a cooking recipe, and then you cook for 40 minutes. And for me, this is the balanced approach, because you take advantage of the technology, but then you do something in real life. And for me, this is how to have a balanced approach to make sure younger generation, but we as well, can benefit from both worlds, you know, not only fully digital, not being only in nature and doing meditation all the time, but really finding the best way in between that help us to take all the advantages that life has to offer us.
Yeah, balance in all things. Isn't that what we need? Time to take a short break right now, but I'll be back with more from Gabriel Pitt right after these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my special guest today, the digital well-being expert, Gabriel Pitt. We were talking about seeking balance before the break, but I put it to Gabriel that it's tough when social media, for instance, engenders a fear of missing out, FOMO, and a craving for the next dopamine hit. It seems to have become an addiction for some.
Yeah, you're right. The digital devices and social media provide us with rewards, and it has different aspects. But speaking about addiction, I investigate, and the scientific environment and world is now searching if it is really an addiction or not. There are some debates right now that are starting, because it seems that if you have an addiction, it's when you don't have your smartphone. I make it simple. Huh? When you don't have access to something, which is the same case for any other addiction, you start to have a really bad behavior. You lose the control over your peers, your friend, your family, because you need to have to get access to what you're addicted to. So the point is that if now we remove smartphone to 100% of smartphone owner, there might not be a big drama, you know what I mean? Like people getting crazy because they need the smartphone. And there are some studies now showing that a little proportion of people are addicted. And it seems that one study said it's the same, the percentage, and unfortunately for them, is the same percentage for other addiction. So the figures, but it's starting, you know, to be explored. The figures, it's between 1 to 3% of the population. And I saw another study saying that for the younger generation was between 5 and 7%. But again, it's really now starting to be explored. And that's why I'm speaking about habits, because you can change your habits when you are not addict. And if you are addict, you need to go to a doctor or a psychologist, and changing your habits won't be effective. So that's why I wanted to speak about these differences. And I believe this is really important, because back to social media and the other, you can change your habits and being able to manage that. But it's a process that doesn't last 1 or 2 days. It's like for any habits that you want to change, it should last for a couple of weeks or months, depending on your willingness, on how much effort you put in changing your habits. How is the environment? Do you have support? But this is feasible. You know, I had a young client, 24 years old. He was 8 hours a day on his smartphone, and then he went to one and a half hour. We spent 14 weeks together to make sure he can be in control. But that implies different. You know, it's not just deleting one app and it's done.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not the right path, you know, because otherwise you are frustrated. So it's learning slowly but surely how to better manage your habits and your smartphone and your devices. And then, instead of not being controlled by the devices, say it's control it, you know. And at the end of the, and the, I take this example again, at the end, this guy told me, I feel free.
Yeah, that's really very interesting, actually. It's a good point as well, the difference between an addiction and just a very ingrained habit.
Yeah,
you can very easily change a habit. Well, easily, it takes time, as we know, to change a habit. So, you know, when I go out of the house and I've forgotten my smartphone, I kind of go, oh, no, you know, and I panic for a moment. But then I get over it and think, well, you know, what does it matter? As long as I know that I have forgotten it and not lost it somewhere, you know, that it is at home. So, but you do get that panic when you're without it for a while.
I give an exercise to my clients about that, because of course, if you are used to get to have your smartphone all the time and tomorrow you forget it, you will have this panic moment.
Yeah.
But the one of the explanation I found about that is that now we are used to have everything accessible in one click in our
pocket. Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So we are no more used to plan in advance. Because we know if there is something happening, I just grab my smartphone and I can solve the problem. So one of the advice I give my clients, because I don't ask them to, this is an exercise I give my client. Now you plan a day without your smartphone. But this day most probably will be a Saturday, you know, where there is no expectations or tasks to do. And then you plan in advance your day fully, without any things that are not planned. And then you do your Saturday, like, okay, I go shopping 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, I have a lunch planned with Pauline, okay, and 2 o'clock, I have a coffee or tea time, it's tea time for you. I have tea time at 4 o'clock there. And then you try to do it several times. And then you can slowly but surely, as I said, it's not a process that you start day one and then you can change everything. This exercise is more at the end of the training I offer, but it's more than slowly but surely you are able to recover your control capabilities over technology. And then people are doing that. Oh, yes, it's feasible. It's feasible and nothing happens, you know. But
yeah, no, nobody dies. And that's how we used to live. We used to make an arrangement to meet somebody and we would get there on time, hopefully. And, you know, there were no issues. You know, you arranged everything in advance. You maybe met somebody the day before, or you called somebody on a landline the day before and said, okay, I will meet you for lunch at 12 o'clock. Wow. And that was it.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was working.
It worked.
And it could still work, you know, because me, I'm laughing when I have a meeting or an appointment with someone, you know, I'm there and usually I don't have my smartphone because what could happen? Okay. If people are earlier, 5 minutes, okay, they're early. If I'm late, I can be late 5 minutes, okay? But almost all the time, you know, you have a message saying, I'm late, I will be there in 5 minutes. And then you answer, okay, I'm there already. And then you start to think, was it useful? Yes, no. No, I'm there.
No.
What will happen? I'm there. And if I'm late, I'm a little bit late. And that's it. But now we are in this immediacy mode, let's say, that you need to say, I will be late. I'm there. I'm just waiting for you.
Yeah. It is this immediacy, this need for everything to be immediate. Mm-hmm. Everything in our lives now has to be immediate, or else we don't have the patience.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that I notice is that lack of patience with people.
I think technology or the pace of technology triggered impatience in our life. And this is again a topic I will touch base in this conference I will host in one month.
Yeah.
Because people as well do not realize that, but we are impatient most probably because of technology. And on the other hand side, you know, when people are answering me emails like 1 or 2 days after my mail, I receive so many times, sorry for the delay. And I'm there, but there is no delay. Huh? 2 days, that's fine. Nothing, you know? And I receive so many times in the emails, apologize for being so late. But it was 2 days. Huh? Because,
I've been guilty of that myself. I've done that myself. You know, not got back to somebody immediately and then apologized. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the truth is that, and this is based on our perception. Now we are in this immediacy world. Everything should be now and now. And we have lost a bit the ability, you know, this matrix, emergency or urgency, important, urgent, important.
Yeah.
And if it's urgent, important, I focus on that, but the rest, there are two, three other options, you know, delegate, do not treat, and so on. This matrix, it's Eisenhower, the name of the matrix. I think it's no more used. It's obsolete today. It's no
yeah,
more,
yeah.
And again, if you have something really urgent, then you just do a call, you'll grab your smartphone, somebody see, missed call, it might be urgent. But otherwise, we don't have the we don't have the message app engraved in our hands, you know, ready to type. And yeah, so, sometimes I see that in many situations you can now discuss this topic about immediacy. Many, many situations in our life. And again, the idea of changing your digital habits is being able to say, it's not saying I don't need to answer fast or I need to answer very fast, is when do I need to be very fast and when can I be slower, you know?
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's that discernment.
Yeah,
and we've
it's again
lost
balanced.
That. Yeah, that
it's
balance.
Again balanced, you know? It's not everything should be answered right now. It's this is a very urgent importance, so I need to answer right now, but this is not urgent important, so I can wait and I put that reply later.
Yeah, and you know, I'm getting much better at that. If an email isn't urgent, I don't rush to answer. Doesn't mean I don't answer in a timely fashion. And I'm doing better at not apologizing too. Right now, though, it's time for another short break. Back with more sound advice from Gabriel Pitt after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is digital well-being expert Gabriel Pitt. Getting back to the point about human interaction, when we were young, you didn't need smartphones to arrange a play date. Children would just be out playing with one another as a matter of course.
Exactly, exactly. And I think here, because I had different talk as well with younger, like 10, 12 years old children. And I think it's not, again, it's not different from our age. The need is starting to be together with your friend and communicating, but with it as you describe it, meaning there is a place we go there and we play together and we communicate and we work together. But now that it's no more as easy as it was, the devices have replaced these talks. And now it means that instead of going somewhere to talk and to congregate and exchange with other, then you use your device. But exchanging through a messaging app, and we said that before, it's not at all the same feeling experience than exchanging in real life. Like, you know, now we are exchanging through screens, so it's two dimension. Of course, it has nothing to do when we will meet in real life together in three dimensions and just see, you know, we see our shoulders and our face, seeing the full body. It's a totally different experience. And that's why the need of communicating and meeting some friends remain the same, but now it's no more the same mean to do it. And that's why, if people are listening to us for their kids like age 10 to 15, what I encourage really is not doing messages or doing a bit, but if you feel that the conversation will be like but just give a call or do a video call, you know, because then with the voice, just having the voice involved in the exchange process is totally different than just typing or reading. And
yeah,
of course, now there are the vocals, but I really encourage people to call, to do video, or what I'm encouraging as well is to meet.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Go outside.
Strange.
Yeah, go outside and meet.
So it is all about balance. What's your feeling about giving children smartphones? Because there's been a lot of kickback against children in schools having smartphones these days.
Yeah. I think that I can draw a very simple conclusion. We as adults, we struggle with smartphone. So how could children deal with that technology? So this is my first conclusion. And then for me, the challenge, the real challenge, because I have children myself, and there is this social pressure. Like we had when I was young, people wanted to have some sneakers, you know, like branded sneakers, and some do not have them. And you wanted to have the sneakers because you are cool if you have the sneakers. If you don't, you are not cool. And this is the same with the smartphone right now. And you have this social pressure to get to that. And we didn't touch base the overstimulation, but I think one critical point now in our society is hyperstimulation, meaning that if we are all the time stimulated, which is the case with the technology everywhere that surround us, then you miss, or you are no more able to have no stimulation. You know, on one hand side you have stimulation, and the other side you have contemplation. And I think now it's very difficult for people to be in contemplation mode because we are more in this overstimulation mode.
Yeah.
And for children, for me, the current challenge right now is to allow them to not be overstimulated with technology.
Yeah.
For me, that's really the critical point. It's to make sure they have the control over the technology, meaning I can send some messages left and right, being in contact to communicate. Voilà. With this age. And there was a study in Australia with 17,000 young people, and their recommendation was like giving the first smartphone to girls at 13 years old, and for boys it was 15 years old.
15. Wow.
15. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah,
so that was one study made in Australia. 17,000 people, that's quite a big amount of people. I'm always, you know, with studies, you really need to have more and more studies that say that. But that was one I recall about children.
That's quite an age, though. And of course, our brains are still forming at that age. So I can understand why they would maybe recommend that. You've given us some great tips on how to modify how we deal with the digital age and how we can modify our behavior. Is there any one key message that you would give to help us just become less tied to our digital devices and become much more engaged with, I was going to say real life, but you know, I don't mean real life because the digital age is real life, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think I have one simple tip, because again, I developed this methodology called Master Your Digital Habits. And I don't have any algorithm, apps, or any AI. For me, it's about common sense. Well, all my advice are about common sense. Of course, I have two or three tips on the devices and so on. But for me, the real success is when you can yourself be back in control. And what I will give you and the audience as a tip, it's that I said before, you know, the only fact that you see your smartphone reduce your cognitive capacity, but as well trigger in you the envy to check what is happening. So first of all, you need to make sure your smartphone is not in, you cannot see your smartphone. And I can do a comparison. If you love chocolate, you know, me, I loved chocolate, but in the past, if I now have chocolate in my kitchen, I will eat all the chocolate. So the solution is that I don't have chocolate. So I don't eat chocolate anymore. Because if I have chocolate there, I will eat the chocolate. Full stop. No debate. I love it. I know I love it. So I don't purchase chocolate anymore. Simple as that. And the second point is that this is a bit different versus chocolate, because if you don't have your smartphone, but you are used to, I take an example, 8 p.m., you have had your dinner, and now usually at 8 p.m. you grab your smartphone and you spend 1 hour scrolling. Even if you don't have your smartphone visible at that time, what are you going to do? If the three last year Every day at 8 o'clock, you was on your smartphone at home in your sofa and checking it. And now tomorrow I tell you, ah, but no, you don't need to see it and it's done. No, it's not working, you know, because you are used every day at the same time to be 1 hour on your smartphone scrolling. So you need to find an activity that helps you to not be frustrated. So if you like to draw, you draw. If you like to paint, you paint. If you like to play cards, you play cards. If you like to do anything, play guitar, piano, whatever you like, you do it instead of spending time on the smartphone.
I think that's a brilliant piece of advice there. And I'm like you, not with chocolate so much. I'm not that keen on chocolate, except I do like white chocolate, which to chocolate connoisseurs is an absolute anathema. But but I do that with biscuits. I don't buy biscuits. Except, yeah, because if I have them, yeah. I eat them. Yeah. And I don't want to eat them. So, yeah. I, you know, maybe one or two, but then you have to buy a packet. And then, you know, because the packet is there, you eat it. So, yeah,
exactly.
I don't buy them.
Exactly. And it's difficult to not eat the packet because it's good.
Yeah.
And on the other hand side, you know, on the other hand side, again, it's a question of balance.
Yeah.
You need, my method is not about not having access to smartphone, you know? So you need to
exactly.
be, on, if you, I give you an example of something really beneficial of the smartphone. I need to get inspiration for sport. Take an example. If I go to media, social media and I can control my time on social media, thing, I want 10 minutes of sports inspiration, tennis, like, let's say tennis. So I follow some people who are in tennis, 5 or 10 people, and then I spend my 10 minutes on tennis, watching techniques, how to improve the technique and so on. But it's good. And then after my 10 minutes, I put my smartphone elsewhere. And I do my other activity in real life that helped me instead of 1 hour passively watching things that are not relevant.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And again, this is a question of balance. And the point is that people need to have this control. This is all about now being in control and being the boss towards your digital devices instead of suffering because of it.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. And your book, again, is called Be Present. Subtitle is Why It's Time to Control Your Digital Habits. Yeah, it's really worth getting a hold of because it's full of really interesting but also useful tips, but not doing down our digital age, not doing down digital media because it's part of our lives now. We,
exactly.
You know, we have to get used to it. Gabriel, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I wish you all the best with the book, which, as I say, is a great resource if you're looking to find more balance in your life.
Thank you to you for having me.
Oh, and by the way, before we go, is there somewhere that people can get a hold of you if they want to contact you? And do you have a website?
Yes, I do. I do, of course. You can find me on internet. www.gabrielpitt.com. And my method is called Master Your Digital Habits. The name was really, it took me time, but it was really more the idea to be in the movement, you know, to move forward rather than saying detoxing anything, you know?
Yeah, that's an overused word at the moment when it comes to digital habits. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Fantastic. And I really do applaud Gabriel for coming up with a book that isn't just a book, but a transmedia object that combines old school print with digital. You see ebooks with links and QR codes, but I don't think I've ever seen a physical book presented in that way before. I've tried to bridge that gap myself in a way by creating videos to help people relax for 5 minutes. You'll find them both on my websites, thepracticalalchemist.uk and safehavenhealing.uk. And that's all we have time for today. This show is brought to you in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants, as well as indoor and outdoor allergens, perfect for travellers and allergy sufferers alike. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.